And the words of my mouth and thoughts of my heart be acceptable before you, Hashem, my rock and redeemer. Shalom. Welcome, everybody, to our Kosher Torah open forums. Of course, I'm your host, Ariel Bar Tzadok. We are in a series of lessons, which I've entitled The Laws of the Occult, based upon of course, on the Code of Jewish Law, the Shulchan Aruch, section Yor Adea 179. And tonight's topic, we're going to talk about talking to the dead. We're going to talk about ghosts and seances and Ouija boards and all that other kind of fun stuff. This is such a popular topic. Explains a whole lot of different things. But the references to the material in the Code of Law are rather simple. There are two sections, sections 13 and 14, and I can actually read them to you, and I think I'm just going to do that right now, so that we have what the law states. And then we're going to go into everything else to explain why and what the law really means. Before I read, remember that it is a biblical commandment not to consult what are called an ob or a yaduni, which would kind of mean to consult with the dead or with mediums who channel the dead. That's a foundational law of the Bible. It's applicable pretty much to everybody. But to every law, there is a reason. To every law, there is a purpose. That is what tonight we're going to discuss. The Code of Jewish Law very simply just states like this. Section 12 and 179. Doresh el ha-metim, ze shemariv atzmo, consulting the dead. This is one who is going to take himself and lie down or dwell in a cemetery in order that an unclean spirit can dwell upon them. Period. That's it. That's all that it says. Doesn't say permitted, doesn't say forbidden, doesn't say good, bad, just defines. Section 14. Lashpia et achole, lashuba alav leachar mita lagidlo et asher yishaloto mutar. To make one who is sick take a vow that after they die that they should return to you after death and they should answer your questions, this is considered a permissible practice. We'll discuss more about that as we proceed. Rabbi Moshe Isserles in the Haggadah adds to this and states, V'yesh metrin apilu l'charim oto. There are those who permit you to do this even after death. Im eno mashpia gufo, as long as he does not, you know, command his body, the body of the dead one to arise, only his soul. All the difference of body and soul is a big deal. And he quotes all the different sources in earlier code sources. Okay, we will get to that. But now, let's put certain things in context, because we're going to have to make a fundamental paradigm shift in order to understand this material. Okay? Number one, what is life and what is death? You're never going to understand talking to the dead. You're never going to understand what the dead are if we don't understand basics and where we are today in the present evolutionary process of humanity. Okay, let me talk like this. Originally, the dimensional shift between what we today call the conscious and the unconscious world, or what we call the physical and spiritual worlds, that rift, which is fundamental to our reality today, originally did not exist. It did not exist originally in Adamic consciousness or if you will, biblically, Adam before the fall in the Garden of Eden. This is very clear in later Kabbalistic writings. It's clear in ancient Talmudic sources, and even echoed as far back as pseudepigraphal literature, Qumranic literature, Merkava and Hechalot literature, that the original state of the human existence spanned multiple dimensions simultaneously. And if you cannot grasp that concept, let me explain it to you in a way that you can. We exist today in simultaneous dimensions, even though we don't think of it. For example, we exist in the physical domain. And if you don't know what that is, knock yourself in your head with your fist, you'll get it. We exist in an emotional domain, where in which our emotions can overwhelm us and color our reality. At the same time, we can exist in an intellectual domain, where in which we can get so involved in the world of thoughts, ideas, and concepts that we lose grasp of the actual world around us. Politicians, philosophers, college professors are especially good at doing that. And that's why the combination of all of them screw up the world so much. They try to impose an illusion upon reality. These are actual different realities. There are higher realities. We call it, for lack of a better word, spiritual. The mind, as we know, is split between the conscious and the unconscious. The unconscious is existing in other dimensions at this very moment. It is aware. It is interacting with those dimensions as much as we are interacting with this dimension right now. As I am presenting this class to you from my office, I have members of my family outside in other places in this domain. I do not see them. I'm not aware of what they are doing at this moment. I am acknowledging their existence. I know they're out there somewhere doing something. But I am not in touch. Why? I have a wall in front of me. I have a door closed. I'm paying attention to you. So my eyes and my mind are in a different direction. You understand the concept. That which we call the unconscious, these higher dimensions and realms, are blocked from us in similar manner. Because our minds, our eyes, are geared towards this dimensional plane, this focus, this reality, and therefore these higher domains are blocked off from our attention. This is a collective human handicap. It is actually a mental retardation, and it is true to call it such. So therefore, under the present status of our limitations, the original Torah that was given at Sinai in the hands of Moses was geared towards expanding our consciousness and integrating us into the higher and comprehensive realms. To using a term, uniting heaven and earth. Or in other words, like you read in later Kabbalistic literature, Moses was the Messiah. Because the Torah of the Messiah is the integration of these dimensional planes. That's why it says, Yivlah HaMavet LeNetzach, death will be no more. Why? Because the concept of death, which is the division of consciousness, will no longer exist. We will return to our original state. But right now, we are mentally handicapped. The laws of the Torah, as they were given to us from the second commandments, because of the sin of the golden calf, where in which we expressed an inability psychologically to see beyond the present limitations. So Torah was given to us in its present form. And we were commanded very clearly, don't go messing around in the other dimensions, simply because we as a race, not just Jews, we as a race, all humanity, are presently too immature, too inexperienced, not evolved enough, not grown up enough to be able to handle these experiences with any sense of properness. Now, just because we're told stay away, don't be bad, doesn't mean that the realities of which we speak of in any ways disappear or dissipate. They're very well there. And the entire history of world civilization in every period of time has always had those single individuals who have always had contact in these other dimensions. But the nature of their reality is what must be understood. And in that context, will you be able to understand the prohibitions and the parameters? Now, just as a basic statement, I'm asked so childishly, are we really allowed to talk to the dead? And I respond, everybody talks to the dead. What kind of question is that? You've never lost a loved one? You've never gone to the cemetery, to the grave of mom and dad, or someone said, Mom, I miss you, I love you? You don't do that? What's wrong with you? Man, I would think you're a sociopath if you don't have those feelings. Everybody I know, I don't care how religious you are, irreligious, or what religion. Christian, Jewish, everybody. You go, you mourn the loss, you talk to people, it is common. You're not trying to do some psychic occultic divinations. You're not practicing mysticism. You talk to the dead. The issue is, once the dead talk back, that's what we got to deal with. So now, what's it all about? Of course, we have the very famous story from the Bible, the story of the prophet Samuel, where in which King Saul is perplexed, he's going to go to war, and he goes to the witch of Endor to conjure up the soul of Samuel, who, by all means, does pop up and says to the king, hey, guess what? You'll be with me tomorrow. Ho, ho, ho. What's going on? I would think Samuel, the holy prophet, is in heaven. I would think he's up there communing with God, with Moses, with Aaron, with all the holy ones. How is it that this witch, who supposedly is invoking from the sources of evil, how is it that she has the long-distance phone number to heaven? How is it that she has the proper exchange, that she can make a phone call up to heaven, hello, etc. and so on? Come on! The story, I accept as quite literal. But it must be understood. Now, I will explain to you. Torah literature, there are always different names for the what we call different parts of the soul. Don't look at parts like parts of the body, an arm or a leg or anything of the kind. That's all symbolism. Never confuse symbolism for what it's meant to be. Now, there is when our consciousness, let me back up. Consciousness, sentience, that which we truly are, is a compilation of aware information. Our original form, as best as we understand it in this dimension, is what we would call a ball of light. Many a time when you see authentic crop circles being made, they're made by balls of light. Those are real spirits. Yes, they are. That's what it looks like. Now, these energy fields come to Earth and are responsible for the manipulation at the atomic level of specific chemicals, which then form to construct cells, form DNA, form an embryo, form the body, and thus birth. So therefore, the energy of that which we call sentience obviously has to be there at conception. And I'm asked, well, doesn't it say that the soul doesn't come into the body until 40 days later? Yeah, but remember I said there are different words for soul. Just like you are born into this world, so the soul is born into the body. It takes time for the DNA and the cellular structure to get to a point where actual consciousness in the womb can have a kernel, a seed, in which to incorporate itself in this build. As that is occurring, your greater consciousness is not disconnected. In Torah language, your greater consciousness, the greater higher self, that which we are, is called our neshama. That's the Hebrew word for what we call the soul, neshama. The neshama soul, only a very small part of it comes into the body for a specific purpose. That small part of it that comes into the body is overwhelmed by the senses in normal circumstances due to our mental retardation, loses contact with the rest of its own self, usually in childhood, and therefore strengthens its connection to this external world at the expense of its origins and internal self. As the neshama enters into the body, it is maintained there by the life force energy. We orient it's called chi. We know it in Hebrew as nefesh. It is the life force energy that literally energizes the body. It is what keeps us alive. As the neshama and its higher awareness is repressed, it goes into a realm of the mind, which is blocked off from the external sensorial consciousness, and the nefesh develops a consciousness of its own. It's supposed to be able to go back and forth, nefesh, neshama, neshama, nefesh. But due to this state of mental retardation in our intellect, rationalization, philosophy, realming in the realms of mind, emotion, and the physical, we disconnect from this higher realm. And therefore, the nefesh develops an independent consciousness based upon the chemical structure of the deforming flesh in the DNA. And it maintains, in most of us, a separate and independent identity from the neshama. That is how most of us go through life. When it comes time for the body to die, what does that mean? It means that the neshama dislocates from the body. That can happen through natural processes or through the breakage of the body, whether it be accident, violence, or whatever else. At this time, the neshama doesn't go anywhere. There's no place for it to go. It's always in the same place. But the nefesh usually then goes through a process of birth into this other world, just like it was born into this world, where in which it has to learn the language again of the neshama world, which is the archetypal language, the language of dreams, the language of prophecy. Right, every warm morning we wake up from a dream, I don't understand. Well, when you no longer have a physical brain, you're going to have to understand. However long it takes you to understand it, that's how long it's going to take you to acclimate into our home world. For some, that's a very difficult and painful process. Our sages referred to that as chibut hakever, or the beatings in the grave. Symbolically, it states that when you die, an angel comes and asks you your name. And you say, gee, I don't remember my name, and then it beats you until you do remember your name. It's not asking you for the name of the physical body that just died. Hey, my name is Joe. No. Your neshama, your higher self, your true identity, is your in-quote name. So the nefesh, which is disconnected, is being, in quote, asked, do you know where you belong? Now that you're waking up, are you aware? Are you able to reintegrate? And the nefesh, which has developed its own identity, says, no. What? What are you talking about? I don't know. And there is a process wherein which the nefesh has to go to reintegrate into the higher realm. Many a time, if the nefesh is able, it begins a process of transformation, and it can experience the other side depending on its own state of mind, based upon its behavior and its orientation in this world. And therefore, in an afterlife will experience either a heaven or a hell. And each soul will experience that, and I speak of the nefesh soul now, which will experience that which is unique to their culture. So therefore, when a Jew dies, he goes to Jewish heaven. When a Christian dies, he goes to Christian heaven. Muslim dies, he goes to Muslim heaven. Don't get political with me on that one. Etc. and so on. This is a temporary state which enables the nefesh to reintegrate into the higher neshama soul, which is a process which by our standards is taking thousands of years. There are those individuals who in their meditative experiences in this world help progress this procedure into the next world. That's why we teach meditation. That's why we do the Merkava Ascents. That's why I give all kinds of discounts on my courses to get you people involved to do things, to mature, to go beyond kindergarten and nursery school to maybe get you to the level of grade school. And my private students, maybe beyond that. It's all a matter of growth. As there are their souls that when they, nefesh souls, when they leave the physical body, truly rebel and reject moving forward and literally run away. They're afraid of leaving the physical world and they hightail it. These are called earthbound souls, neshamot artalaim. They are the most dangerous of them all. They're what we call in Hebrew dibukim. They're the ones that possess others in life. Remember, life is energy. The physical brain is an energy receiver. And any time consciousness of the brain is dulled through the usage of drugs, alcohol, or anything similar, there is an opening due to the lack of consciousness wherein which something else can enter in. And that's what we call possessions or influences and the like. The only way to change that, of course, is to change the person. But that's another topic for another time. These influences can literally stay with one throughout one's life. But moving right along. Those who are properly educated and trained know and expand consciousness that when they pass beyond the body, their nefesh transforms and is absorbed immediately into their neshama, and that's called ascent into the higher Garden of Eden. The lower souls many times come back in what many believe in is reincarnation. Now I know that's a controversial topic in the eyes of many, but for the past 600-700 years, if not longer, there is evidence that reincarnation was accepted by almost every single rabbi in the last 600-700 years seems to be references to it in both Quranic literature and surprisingly even in Christian literature before the church wanted to declare it to be a pagan idea. apparently that wasn't the accepted belief of Yeshu and his original followers. There's evidence to that. But that's, again, topic for another story. Another time. Getting back to the issues here. When the soul leaves the body, it goes on its way. Your consciousness moves on to what we could call heaven or hell, wherever else you're going. But there is still a residual effect of you, the nefesh part of you, kind of like a residual of a computer program, left in the decomposing flesh in the DNA. That can be and often is experienced, felt by those who are sensitive enough to feel it. Sensitive, what does that mean? That they're able to expand consciousness through whatever electric force is going on in the brain to sense it. This is why you can go to a graveyard and you can sense presences there. That's real. We have a very famous story in the Talmud, in Tractate Berachot. Very famous story of a man. Got into a fight with his wife. She threw him out of the house. He was embarrassed to go and stay in a hotel, so he went and hung out in the graveyard. And as he was sleeping there, he heard the spirits talking. And the spirits were saying, "Hey, what's going on?" And they said, "Oh, this year you're going to have this, and this year you're going to have that." Guy listened to the spirits and made a lot of money. Story goes. Next year he had the same fight with his wife, went back to the graveyard again, heard the spirits, and again made business decisions based upon what he heard. By the third year, again, says, the spirits said, "Hey, we got to shut up. People are listening." Now, whether or not this story is literal, I don't think so. If it actually happened, I don't think so. But it's meant to teach us a tale to us. A moral story. It's a homiletic tale to teach us what? That there is the ability, because mind contacts mind. For those people who know how to expand consciousness and to pick up on these subtleties like we learn in meditative practices, you tap into that deeper recesses of your own unconscious and therefore become aware of the multitude of things that are there. Only one of which are the brainwave activities, also known as the nefesh, of many others, past, present, and future, in the body and out of the body. You tap into greater mind sources. Now, you can imagine how confusing that will be, how overwhelming it will be. Compare it, if you will, to turning on all 500 stations of your cable TV at once and trying to hear one voice out of all of that noise. That's what it's like until you can learn to tune it in to a single station. But yet, this is what it's like. The Witch of Endor knew this. And she was able to go into a trance and pick up the image of Samuel. She did not conjure up what's called the Neshama of Samuel, but rather she conjured up the residual consciousness in his DNA called his nefesh. And that's why she could have access to it, because the nefesh was in the ground and she could have access to it from that. This is what Rabbi Moshe Isserles was referring to when he says here, you can go and conjure the dead, but you don't call upon their bodies, but only their souls. Don't call upon the body. What do you want? You want the dead body to come back? What are we, in zombies now? I don't think so. What it meant was, we don't call the nefesh level, but the neshama level. And we find numerous experiences throughout the centuries of holy sages coming and revealing themselves to people. I won't tell you stories of Elijah, because technically he never really died. But it is a very interesting story in the Talmud which relates that Rabbi Yehuda Hanasi, the prince, when he died, he would come back to his family every Friday night and have Kiddush with them. How freaky is that? Can you imagine burying daddy on a Wednesday, and then Friday night he comes home for Shabbat? Whoa! That would be rather freaky. But that's exactly what happened. Because Rabbi Yehuda, like the great Tzaddikim before him, was able to make a complete transition. And literally would appear to his family, if you allow me to use a Hollywood example, like the glittering, glowing body of Obi-Wan Kenobi when he would appear to Luke Skywalker. That is what we call the Chalukah de Rabbanan, or the spirit body. When the nefesh leaves this earth before it can integrate into the neshama, that's what it experiences. It looks at itself, and that's what it sees, and goes to heaven or hell accordingly based upon what it sees. It's all in the mind. This process continues until ultimately there is an integration, comprehensive again, the restoration. We call that the resurrection of the dead, the reintegration, the new heavens and the new earth. Those who practice this material now will be able to experience this transition like did Elijah and Enoch at the dawn of the Messianic era. And these souls who are the appropriate enlightened ones will become, if you will, the government of a Mashiach. That is actually referenced in by Rabbi Avraham Azulai in his book Hesed LaAvraham. In the period called the Messianic era, will be a epoch of human evolution where we'll no longer be in nursery school or kindergarten, but in grade school, which souls will eventually evolve, learn, and integrate, until finally we come to that world level called Olam Haba, the world to come, wherein which we will be able to evolve and integrate, and everything goes back to the way it was, and then we evolve beyond to a much greater and different level. This is our destiny. So our point and purpose is to move along. But our present form hinders us. Now let's explain some things. When a soul departs the body, sometimes that parting is rather painful. It can be painful for a number of reasons. Number one, the soul didn't want to leave. And it's holding on, holding on, holding on. It's ripped out of the body. Very painful experience. That can happen because of overwhelming desire to stay in this world. It can happen because the soul is taken before its time, either in an accident or through acts of violence. That ripping is an expression of powerful energy, which literally imbues a place with that energy, like the negative of a photograph, so that when you can go into a place in a domain where in which this energy is very much present there, those who are sensitive can pick up on that energy. They can go and say, I feel something here. I feel a presence. Because what you have is the residual effect of the energy of that time. So therefore, when people have been dying through accidents or violence especially, the residual effect of that part of their soul is stuck there. And many times that is perceived as an apparition or a ghost. It is almost that they are in a state of a cloud or confusion. They don't know what happened. They're in a mindset where which they just don't get it. And that can happen, that can last for a very long time. And those who are in the know how to help these souls, if you will, walk into the light. There are those of us who know how to do things like that and to help things like that. Many desperate souls will seek to inhabit other bodies. They're desperate. They're in pain. You can't go to an exorcism, just cast them out and beat them up. Doesn't work like that. You have to heal them. But that's another story. Higher souls, when they do leave and transcend to the higher realms and integrate, are very well aware of what's going on down here, because there's an integration. Nefesh, neshama are reintegrated. And as such, they can exist simultaneously in both worlds and are aware of everything going on here. In such circumstances, it's written in both the Zohar and hinted to in the Talmud itself. It's referenced by Rabbi Yosef Chaim, the famous Ben Ish Hai Baghdad, in his book Da'at HaTfuna, in the 41st chapter, that the souls of these dead pray for the living all the time, and if it wasn't for their prayers for us, we wouldn't survive. So you see, that what we call death is really just a transition. We don't see the soul as it passes on, and therefore we miss it. We feel, because of our lack of perception, we feel a rip and a loss. But from the soul's point of view, there is no loss. There is no rip. There is no nothing of the kind. And that's the reality that it experiences. And I have known people who have suffered terrible loss. Terrible, terrible loss. Violent loss of like children and the like. And under such circumstances, what can you really say to comfort someone? Gee, if you know the words, you tell me, because I certainly don't. I've been a counselor for close to 30 years. To try to tell them all this stuff and all this truth, yeah, yeah, sure, sure. That's not really what helps. Ultimately, many people, some of you who are here listening to me live right now, when you've lost loved ones, and I've heard some of you, have shared with me, whether through dreams or experiences, you've heard from lost loved ones telling you that they're okay, things will be well. Then no, they're not giving you the winning numbers of the lottery. They're not telling you tomorrow's stock market. Come on now. But they speak to you heart to heart, because that is the true communication of what we call the spirit. But now let's get back to that. Let's talk about Ouija boards and seances and the mediums. Oh, the mediums are so popular all over television. Now, some people are sensitive that they can pick up on things. But the question again is, what are you picking up on? Do you know? Do you know how to distinguish and differentiate? That's a big deal. Now, you remember, we read in the code of law that you're allowed to make somebody who's sick take a vow before they die. You know, you make an agreement. I'm going to come back after I die, and I'm going to come back and we're going to have a chat. Fine. That is an ancient practice, even though the code of law is written in the 1500s. It comes from a much earlier source. And we can find a book called Sefer Chasidim, the Book of the Pious, written by Rabbi Yehuda, in Germany, I think, oh, back 12, 1300s and the like, hundreds of years before that. There's a section, and this is what he writes. It's section 728 in the original. I'm reading from the English translation. Two good friends swore to each other, or promised each other faithfully, that whichever one of them died first would communicate with the other, either through a dream or while awake, and tell them what transpires in heaven. So if the deceased showed himself to his friend in a dream, his spirit would whisper in his friend's ear. If they swore that whoever died first would reveal himself to the other in a wakeful state, then the deceased would ask his guardian angel to clothe his soul in a semblance of an image, making it possible for him to tell his friend the things that he agreed to disclose. But how could the friend verify that the apparition he was perceiving really was his deceased friend, and not a demon or an evil spirit? He would make him swear that he is not a demon, and the demon will not take the name of God in vain, because the dead cannot even mention God's name Yah, Yud-Heh, as it says, the dead cannot praise Yah, Psalm 115, 17. Only the living can praise God, as it says, let all that breathes praise God. All right? Kol neshama yahallel Yah. Okay. What does this mean? When a soul passes, and I said it goes through a process of being birthed into a higher world. If it is bound by an oath to come back and talk to you, it can see that. It can do that. It can come to you and knock on the door of your noggin, but you're so involved in this physical world, you don't get the message. So sometimes it can only come to you in a dream. Those are what we call strong dreams, powerful dreams. Sometimes you'll see the person in the image of how they were in this life, sometimes not. And you get a message, which you may sometimes understand to be from them, and sometimes not. If you are more sensitive, sometimes you can go off into a daydream and see an image. Or sometimes a little birdie might pop in, or some other form in nature might pop up. How do you know that that's what it is? There are a gazillion answers to that. Too many, because whatever possibility could be, can be. But now, due to the existence of many earthbound souls, we didn't mention yet about the Shedim. Shedim are another indigenous race to our planet, an energy form, and they feed off of energy in the same way plants will absorb sunlight in photosynthesis. So therefore, they look towards human beings as a source of food. That's right, you are hamburger to them. And when we allow the mind to open up through non-cautiousness in our behaviors, these entities can tap on and they can suck off your life force like a straw. Now, these are real. Should they be doing it? No! But you shouldn't be opening yourself up to it either. Let me compare it to a polar bear. How many of you have ever gone to the zoo and seen polar bears? I have. They're lovely creatures. I'd love to be able to go into the den of the polar bear and pet it and turn it over and rub its belly like I do my dog. But you want to know something? I am under the impression that if I go into the polar bear den, the polar bears are going to look to me as the master and play with me like a dog. I think he's going to look at me like what? Hamburger! He's probably going to eat me. So therefore, I'm going to stay away from the polar bear den. Same thing, you stay away from those things which look at you in the same way. It's really that simple. The problem with the mediums is that while they can be sensitive, they are not sophisticated. Being that the information which was in the life of the past is out there, it's in the earth, mediums can pick up on this. How? Because if there are spirits out there, which could be earthbound souls or Shedim, who pick up energy in the same way you and I would pick up a rock or a stone, if they are in touch with this medium, they can bring to the medium information about the departed one under the guise that they're talking to the departed one, when by all means they certainly are not. And they can have actual, factual information and at the same time being lied to and not even knowing it, and lying to other people, directing them to behaviors and actions or themselves to become open to things, which reinforces people being treated like a milkshake to which a straw is just going to suck you out, or like hamburger where your soul is going to be eaten. Mucho pero! You don't play with polar bears. You don't mess around with spirits to look at you like food. That's why the laws of the Holy Torah were given to protect us. I don't blame the spirits for doing what they do. I don't blame a polar bear for acting like a polar bear. Somebody in text is asking me here, do they have other food sources? Does the polar bear have other food sources? Of course they do. But if you're going to come there and offer them a nice treat of energy, because you're going to be open to it, why shouldn't they go after you?
Can't blame them. That's what they do.
That's why we don't mess around with mediums and things like that, why we don't trust them. So then how do you tell? Hesed Lavram told us right now, you make them take a vow in God's name. You actually have to get them to recite the name. And if they recite the name, there's specific other verses from Book of Jeremiah. Rabbi Yehuda Fatiyav is an expert in this. I've discussed that in other classes that you'll find available on koshertorah.com. You will find that many of them are just not able to do this. They play games, they goof, they try to lie to you, they try to deceive you, and you got to be very sophisticated, you have to be very precise, and you'll be able to tell the difference. I gave a meditation direction in an essay I wrote a while back that in a visualization technique, you're supposed to visualize someone coming to you and giving you something. And you would say, yes, I received it. And then I taught you, the first thing you do when you receive it is you take it and you throw it down. No way. You go, why would I do that? Because that's the way that you become sophisticated. You test to see if it's clear. The only way you test is not through an academic and intellectual profile is to find it some book. But by the interaction. Did you ever have a relationship with another human being? Let's talk men and women, guys, girls. Did you ever go out with somebody on first sight? Oh, she, really sexy, really hot. Oh, yeah. Ready to spend the rest of my life with that person. Until second or third date, you find something, well, and by the fourth or fifth day, you say, man, this person's a real SOB. I can't wait to get away. Or, wow, this person has really proven to me that they're great marriage material and the like. Isn't that the way life is? Can't you learn a lesson from that, children? It's the same thing with testing the spirits. You've got to recognize what's going on. Let's talk about Ouija boards. Did you know Ouija boards? The claim is that they have an ancient history from automatic writings that have been found in China and ancient India and ancient Greece and Rome and the like. But the real Ouija board was developed on July 1st, 1890 by a man named Bond, Elijah Bond. You know his grandson, Bond, James Bond. No, obviously I'm only kidding. Anyway, the Ouija board is an American development. It is the registered trademark of the Hasbro Toy Company. You go out today to Toys R Us and you can buy the glow-in-the-dark Ouija board. Does it work? You bet it does. Now, it's very interesting how a Ouija board works. Now, for those of you who don't know, Ouija board's a little board, plastic wood. It's got letters on it. It's got yes and no and things. And it's got something called a little planchette, which is like a little elevated little thing with a hole in the middle where you can see a letter. Everybody using it touches it with just the little tip of their finger, and they say, oh, eeny, meeny, chilly, beeny, these spirits are about to speak. Oh, spirit, are you here? And all of us, you'll see that the planchette, this little thing in the middle, starts to move on its own, even though your finger's on it. They'll spell, yes. Well, could you give me the lottery numbers for tomorrow? And then it'll start spelling out, and, oh, whatever, right? Go online, you'll look, there are numerous stories of the Ouija boards which have frightened people. I know people have done it. Something real comes through the Ouija board. That makes it dangerous. Modern science has clearly seen that the Ouija board does work. But they claim that it's not something supernatural. They call it what's an ideomotor reflex. That's the official psychology term. What is an ideomotor reflex? It refers to a process whereby thought or mental image brings a seemingly reflexive or automatic muscular reaction off of minuscule degree and potentially outside of the awareness of the subject. Okay? It's kind of like if you start thinking about sucking a lemon, that all of a sudden your mouth is going to start to, you know, secrete saliva kind of thing. What they've just said is that somehow in some way you're unconscious. Remember they just said it is unaware in consciousness. It's automatic, right? Your unconscious is channeling through you, making the planchette move. I agree. It probably is an ideal motor response, but the question is, what's moving your unconscious? What's making it go in the direction it does? That they don't ask. That they don't want to know. But yes, it does work. Now, if you are Kadosh, and you wanted to use a Ouija board, well, chances are it ain't going to work by getting any kind of bad spirits. Because if you're sitting there reciting Tehillim, Psalms, and you're calling on holy names, by definition, you're not going to be able to get entities and souls outside of the frequency to connect. And you might say, well, am I making a suggestion that Ouija boards can be used? Believe it or not, that's a good question. You'll find online there is religious literature which addresses the subject. There actually have been rabbis who have used Ouija boards in the past. Needless to say, they were condemned for doing so. Why? Because you cannot clearly ascertain the identity of what you're dealing with. You can say, well, then I just say if you're holy and everything else, yeah, but you're so sure you're holy? You're so sure you don't have any questionable energies in you? That's what you got to focus on. That's what you got to be concerned with. Because these things, as I said, are real. Now, let's talk about seances. Again, we're going to call on the ghosts. We're going to have a ghost-to-ghost broadcast. Seances have been done in the highest circles. It is well known in documented history that Mary Todd Lincoln, the wife of President Abraham Lincoln, performed seances in the White House during that time, which the President Abraham Lincoln himself attended. There is even some claim that spirits from beyond spoke to the President and endeavored to direct him in the war efforts of the Civil War, possibly even provoking the war in the first place. You see, the entities that come by are not interested in trying to teach you of enlightenment, wisdom, drawing close to God, morality, and righteousness. Oftentimes, they're telling you many other things. Their intent is to get you to trust them so that you do listen to them. So therefore, somewhere along the line, they eventually open up your consciousness to calibrate to them so that they can tap into you. If it is an earthbound soul, they will do this so they can possess you, a dibuk. If it is a shed or other similar type spirit, they do this so they can tap into your nefesh energy and suck it off. When you see people who are literally sucking out of life, you can recognize that there's a negative influence on them. This is how you see. Number one, they automatically start developing interpersonal relationship problems. They seem to be all isolated. They can't get along with other people. They have, number two, health problems where their health is failing. Three, they might start having psychological problems. And four, they feel physically weak. They have personality problems. They have health problems. They have strength problems. And of course, financial problems. Whenever you see people are inflicted in all these ways, guaranteed there's something going on there. I remember many years ago in California, somebody came to me and says, this man is a psychic, he can see things, he knows things. And I said, he wants to meet me. So I said, fine, bring him along. No, I'm not afraid. What do I have to be afraid of? I know how to put up what's called a psychic barrier. He comes in, he starts telling me all this stuff, none of which impressed me. And I said, how do you make a living? He says, well, I'm having a hard time. How's your health? Oh, I'm having a hard time. How's your family life? Well, I'm divorced from my family, no one likes me. Well, what do you do all day? Not much, because I have no strength. I said, okay. I knew right away what was going on. I told the people who sent him, I said, this is a guy who's got major problems, stay away from him. You will find that these things are consistent. So the code of Jewish law, again, speaks of going to the cemetery for the sake of putting on a ruach tum'ah, an unclean spirit. What does that mean? What it means is you don't go to a cemetery to try to connect with the nefesh energy that is residually left in the ground in the body. This is what the Ramah stated, that you don't try to conjure up the body. Okay? In essence, if you do try to contact the dead, we try to contact their neshama, their higher self, in another domain. You can do that by going to the grave site, praying to God, and asking for peace and blessings for the ones you miss, or to speak to the ones we miss. That's what I said. Everybody does that, right? My parents have passed away. I've gone to the grave many times. I always shed a tear, wishing mom and dad could see me now. Things like that. And I somehow feel deep down that they do. Why? Because my experiences are inside me. They're in my energy. And that energy projects. My mom and dad's DNA are in me. My DNA. So my energy connects through my DNA. My energy through that connects into the ground where they are decomposing. There's still at least one molecule of DNA down there at M. One connects to the other, and it goes up the chain. The energy connects to that, and the energy of that nefesh channels up to the neshama. That's one way of doing it. That's the down and around way. And mom and dad in heaven, no. And they maybe can come to me in a dream, or if I'm sensitive enough through a vision, and say to me, congratulations, or this is direction, or whatever. These things happen all the time. Happens in every culture. It happens to everybody, depending on their level of sensitivity. Now, that's what this all boils down to. We've pretty much covered the way and nature of things. Ghost stories are real. They happen all the time. Good ghosts, bad ghosts, true ghosts, and false ghosts. I'm asked the question, where do you go when someone's cremated? Remember, doesn't matter. Because you don't need to go to the actual gravesite if someone's cremated, right? You have millions of people who died during the Holocaust. Their souls still speak out. Why? Because somehow, somewhere at a molecular level, a little bit of DNA is out there somewhere amongst the many atoms or molecules in the world. And that still maintains a connection. So somehow, somewhere, a connection is always there. But now understand this. Our purpose is to cultivate sensitivity and sophistication. The courses that I offer in koshertorah.com are specifically designed to give you this, not information, but education, experience, to learn to focus. Somebody here in text is asking to teach about psychic barriers. That's what the meditation process is all about. The Sefer Yetzirah course is all about expanding the minds and the powers of meditation. If you have not taken the course, I've reduced almost 75% off the regular price. I can't do better, but you can. Rise up, learn these things. All the other meditative courses that I have up there, the usage of the holy name, the dream interpretation seminars, these things are for you. Make the investment in your time and your monies and go and get these things. Learn. See for yourselves what needs to be so that you can experience these things. You want to learn deeper things, more academic, take the magic course. That's available. More academic, I got the entire Ohel Moed Masechet Atzilut, two courses. Go click online and you'll see what these are all about. All of this stuff, the Sha'arei Kiddushah course speaks about the body, the holy body, the Chalukat HaRabbanan and the like. These things are here for you. The course about the four rivers of the Garden of Eden is a course, if you will, on magical Kabbalah, using the names and the permutations of the four rivers of Eden as a meditative tool device. But look, I'm not out here to teach you tricks. We're still at a level like in nursery school. We got to grow up. You have to start remembering to transcend all of these illusions. We are not divided by religion. We are not divided by nationality. We are not divided by the color of our skin or the nature of our sexuality. In all due respect, we're all male and female souls composite. So even though you're physically in the body of a male or a female, it's irrelevant. All of these things are irrelevant. We are souls. We are centers of energy. We live in a world, in a universe where everything is energy. Life and death is an illusion corresponding only to this body. Think about this. Know this for sure. Your physical body, that's your body, right? Baloney. How many independent organisms are alive inside your flesh right now? Millions, billions maybe. Every bit of bacteria or everything else that's in there, our bodies are like a universe. Our consciousness imbues it. But boy, oh boy, they are inhabited. And when what we call consciousness leaves the body, which keeps it as a collective, then the individual collective parts reconstitute themselves. That's what we call the decomposure in the grave. And they go back to wherever they're meant to go. And they carry our DNA in many different ways and places as well. That's just the way it is. So understand and know, everything of this world is an illusion. You must cultivate a sensitivity and awareness to the greater realities. So now I'll get a little weird with you. We're in very difficult times right now. The doorways between dimensions is clearly becoming more and more open. That's why we have much more psychic activity happening these days. It is incumbent upon us, instead of being victimized, to learn and become aware of how to be sophisticated, to grow, mature, and to experience these things realistically. Everything that I teach you, Kosher Torah, is to do that. To teach you how to develop what is called your psychic awareness, your parapsychological, your extrasensory abilities. This is the purpose of the Torah. This is the true purpose of religion. Not religious, not ethnicity, not culture, or anything of the kind, not ritual. It's transformation. This is something clearly described by all the rabbis who know it. All the purposes of all the laws is for the rectification of the heart. That being what we call the soul, the mind, the spirit, the reintegration of consciousness into the greater domains. I've taught you a lot tonight. I hope you've been paying attention. All right? Don't go screwing around with Ouija boards or seances and the like, simply because you're not sophisticated enough to know what to do with them. It's really that simple. And ultimately, if and when you gain a level of sophistication, not because you say so, not because you're a medium and you can talk to the spirits, but because you know the proper way how to test them. Somebody's asking me about spiritual defense and protection. Didn't I write a book called Protection from Evil? About exposing all of this stuff. It's available online, koshertorah.com. You can get a hard, soft covered copy or the PDF version. Get it right now at the click of a button. Learn all about these things. These things are real. They cannot and will not be denied. They will follow you through eternity. Learn them now. Take advantage of the opportunities that I have for you. Not for naught are they there. I pray then that you should have wisdom, love and compassion for all of our fellow souls, that you should have pity, mercy for the dead, because they have pity and mercy for you and me. That's why we recite Kaddish, the prayer. We say it's the prayer for the dead. Reciting the Kaddish prayer doesn't make the dead feel good, but what it does, it makes them proud. How? Because those who we love, when we praise God and we correlate and we say the words with proper intent, we are in essence becoming a channel in America of offer God, shining that light
and as it shines to us, it again, through a state of quantum entanglement, reflects in them as well. Now, that is a Jewish ritual. Non-Jewish people, by their righteous actions and prayers and praise of God, do the exact same thing. This is all just what I call spiritual mechanics. That's just the way it works. Okay, I think we've covered this material well enough. So, take it to heart. God be willing, in our next class, we're going to talk about demons and other entities and manipulations of matter. So, God be willing, we'll be back then. Thank you all for joining me. I'm your host, Ariel Bar-Tzedok. See you all. Thanks again. Good night. Shalom.